Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures, the podcast. Today, I have what I would like to call an extra special podcast for you. I feel like I say that a lot, but this topic today that we're going to discuss is something that is very important to me. It's something I'm quite passionate about. And because of that, I feel like I've been avoiding this podcast specifically, because when I start talking about this topic, I tend to spew out words and just never stop. But we're going to try to control this and see what comes out today. I have no plans, so we're just going to talk and see what happens. So the topic is Eva Perón, or Evita, as most of the world might know her. There are so many amazing and, of course, weird things to say about Evita Perón, from the life she lived to the body she left behind. And I guess that's the part that really makes it weird that I want to focus on, is that Eva's body went missing for a long time after she died, and it has quite a story and myths and legends and things associated with it. So that's really the point of focus today on this episode of Weird World Adventures, but I feel like I have to give some backstory, and I feel like I will try to be as brief as possible, but I do think it's important to just say who Eva Perón was and why she is relevant, what she did that matters to the world, her legacy she left behind, and why she became such an icon, because I don't think there could be another Eva Perón today. I think she came and lived at the perfect time to make this sensational icon that we'll remember forever. Let's start, I guess. Who was Evita Perón? Maria Eva Duarte de Perón was born in Junín. It's a province of Buenos Aires in the early 1900s. And she was born into a family of poverty. She was actually a bastard child along with her siblings. So she was not legitimate. And her and her mother and her siblings ran an inn in, you know, basically the boonies of Argentina as she grew up. She basically went from that life to moving to Buenos Aires, Argentina, to becoming a famous actress and then to becoming the first lady of Argentina. So you will know Eva Perón as the wife of Juan Perón, who was the dictator of Argentina in the 40s and 50s, and then later again in the 70s. And she was his wife, and she ran the Ministries of Labor and Health for the Peronista political party. And along with that, I mean, she sensationalized the idea of representing the working class. She represented the descamisados, or the shirtless ones, which was their term for the working class of Argentina, the laborers that really didn't get respect. She kind of came from nothing and represented the idea that you can come from that and make something sensational of your life. And I think that is why so many people in Argentina followed her. And I mean, we'll be real here. I'm going to use this word. They worshipped her because she represented that they could have the life that they wanted if they tried and they worked hard. And I think that's really important. And that, I mean, that is the legacy of Evita, so to speak. What did she do? Evita ran the Ministries of Labor and Health for the Peronista political party, like I said. She founded the Eva Perón Foundation when she was the first lady of Argentina, which was a foundation that was there to help people, to give them what they believed they needed to better their lives. So it's a charitable organization. She founded the first large-scale female political party of Argentina and gave women the right to vote. She was on the front lines championing votes for women from the very beginning, and that did happen in her time there, which is very exciting. She created a city to house all the homeless. So they got the homeless of Argentina off the street and into a fully furnished city where they could live, which is amazing. And as I said, she championed the descamisados, the shirtless everyday laborers and workers who really didn't have a champion at the time. And she had a way with words. I mean, let's be real. That was her real legacy, was she was great at giving speeches and talking and riling people up. So Eva has become this icon throughout world history. And I think there's a lot of reasons why. First, she was a woman leading in a time where women did not do that. She had a lot of people that did not like her on the inside. None of it's Argentinian politics in the 50s, and we have a woman involved. So, of course, a lot of people immediately were opposed to her for that reason. And the oligarch and the rich obviously did not like her because of what she represented. Her legacy came from being a woman, leading in a time when women did not lead, for giving women the right to vote, representing the masses and the working people. And she basically pushed the ideals of a socialistic society, as did Juan Perón. And people of the working class that had nothing, that were so inspired by her, I mean, they tried to kill themselves at her funeral. I mean, people tried to die with her at her casket because they were so just infatuated with her being the salvation of the working class of Argentina. And I think it's also important to say that she was unapologetically herself, and she was loud, and she made a statement, and a lot of people liked that statement. And it's also important to bring up that Eva was the spiritual leader of the nation of Argentina before her death in 1952. She was a candidate briefly for vice president right before her death. She championed Juan Perón for a long time. A lot of people give her credit for getting him into office in the first place to become president. I mean, he was already on the trajectory to get there, but people believe that she provided that extra push to get him in. And people also believe that she's what kept him in office for as long as he was. Her last big hurdle before she died was getting him reelected. And shortly after he was reelected as president of Argentina, she, in fact, died. So that was kind of like her last stint into something before she passed away. And that second time that he was elected, she was originally his candidate for vice presidency. And, you know, there's this horrible image associated with that where people legitimately believe that she pushed for it and kind of manipulated that situation to become vice president, despite the fact that she was dying. And, you know, it actually, she had to resign because there was a lot of opposition to her doing that. And there's this really interesting story I'd like to mention that was in the book Santa Evita. The author of that book did a lot of studying of the Perón's lives, and he actually wrote books on Evita and also Juan Perón as well. He interviewed the people that were closest to her in her life in that time, or kind of became friends with them. And specifically, there's a story in that book that I believe wholeheartedly where he spoke with her hairdresser. And, you know, the thing about hairdressers, and I'm sure all my hairdresser's friends will support this comment, they kind of hear everybody's drama. I mean, when you're sitting in the chair getting your hair done, you kind of just spew all of the drama that's happening in your life. So they get an earful and they become allies to the people they do hair for a lot of times. And with Eva, I mean, she was, I'm sure, in the chair so much with all of the ornate, hairstyles and things she was quite famous for. So her hairdresser was one of her allies, and he saw a lot of the stuff that was going on behind the scenes that no one else could know about. And his picture that he painted of this situation, like I say, I fully believe, I mean, I wasn't there, but this was his story, was that she didn't want the vice presidency originally. She was hesitant about it because she knew the opposition that would basically be directed at her. And at the time, she was fighting to survive. Like, I mean, her life force was literally draining out of her as she died with cervical cancer. And it was pushed on her by Perón and his party because they knew that if she was his running mate, there was no way that he would lose. And he would absolutely become president, and she would become the first female vice president of Argentina. And I think the fear was that if he died, she would then become the first female president of Argentina. And Eva Perón, if nothing else, was not controllable. And in that situation, they wanted someone they could control. And that was definitely not her. So I think they originally pushed her in as a tactic to get people to vote for Juan Perón. And then once she got excited about it, so she did, she was hesitant, she was reluctant, they kind of pushed this on her. And then she rolled with it. And like everything she did, she became very passionate about it. And right when she was passionate and excited and ready, even though she was dying to take the vice presidency, they made her withdraw. So it was kind of this time. And there was this fight that he recounted in La Casa Rosada with her and Juan Perón, where she basically was just desperate at the end of all this and enraged and yelling at him, you know, saying, you give me this thing, I don't want it, and you force me to take it, and you make me get excited about it, and then you take it from me. And so there was a lot of resentment, of course, I think, leading up to the fact that she had to then publicly withdraw her candidacy. There's this iconic photo of her giving a speech on the balcony. It's like this historical moment where she basically was supposed to withdraw her candidacy. And she was so weak at that time that she had trouble standing up at all. So he's kind of having, Juan Perón's kind of having to hold up her body so she can speak to people. And no one will let her speak. So the masses are just screaming and everyone wants her to run and they're all screaming for her. And she literally cannot withdraw her candidacy because no one will let her talk. And it's such a powerfully painted picture in this book that I read. And so in the end, they actually had to hold a special broadcast over the radio where she declined the candidacy for vice president. And that was a very famous historical moment, that broadcast. And the reason, according to this story at least, of why it had to be broadcast was because she was incapable of getting people to stop yelling her name when she tried to do it live. And it just broke her because it was something that was forced onto her that she didn't want and then kind of grew to love and then it was forced out from under her. And I think it's important to say, you know, I guess a lot of the controversy with Evita is that on one hand, she's treated like a saint and the working class of Argentina effectively worshipped her. I mean, really, I mean, she literally gave hope to a nation. And people followed her blindly, and it was this powerful force. And when I went to Argentina in 2009, I mean, it was well over 50 years after she had passed away, and people were still holding mass for her, like as a memorial for her at the anniversary of her death. The whole city was still remembering her so much later. And they held services every year on the anniversary of her death. And then there's just flowers all around her grave site. And I mean, it's something you have to see. I mean, she really left behind a legacy in Argentina. And she's still a political talking point today. And then on the other hand, a lot of the world demonizes her. So she, on one hand, she's a saint. And then on the other side of all of this, she's a demon. She was a whore because, to be honest, she lived with Juan Perón before they were married, and which at the time was just absolutely scandalous. But of course, that made her a whore. So we paint her in the United States as being a whore, as being, this evil, seductive force because she preached socialism, and we definitely did not want people to look or listen to that. So it's funny that she's still basically remembered iconically either as a saint or as a demon. And I think the reality is that Evita was a person. I mean, you know, good and bad, just like everybody else. And I think she had good intentions, and I think she probably had anger issues. I guess I'll say, you know, Evita was a human being like you and I. She had her ups and she had her downs. She had her good moments and she had her bad moments. And Evita, if nothing else, was complicated. The world she lived in was against her, and she had to fight to survive, I think, from an early age. She bit off more than she could chew. I think she found herself, in a way, a prisoner in the world, in the life she chose to live. And I think she was in over her head a lot. And I think in the end that killed her. I mean, South American politics is not a place for a woman in the 1940s. And I'm not saying she was a victim either. Rather than she lived loudly and made dangerous choices, and she made them pretty effortlessly. So no one was able to kind of see, I think, the situation she put herself in. After she died, her brother mysteriously was killed. And everybody pretty much knew, the word on the street was that Juan Perón killed her brother after she died. And Eva was, you know, the force keeping him alive. Like, it was not a pretty situation. She was passionate. She was progressive. She was dedicated to the cause she chose to build. And I think that's, you know, respectable too. It's important to remember she wasn't traditionally educated or guided by anyone either. She was, I'm sure, afraid and cornered and fighting for her life a lot. She was constantly fighting with these political leaders and figures that were in Juan Perón's party. And again, South American politics at that time was not ready for a woman, but it got one. And with that, Eva really did change the world. I don't think there can ever be another Eva Perón in the way that there was, because at the time, Argentina relied heavily on a class system. And that's important to remember, because she came from absolutely nothing and had this Cinderella story and was then, you know, the most powerful woman in Argentina. So to go from nothing and to kind of become everything, so to speak, it broke the class system and it gave people hope that it could be demolished. And I think she initially started that momentum to get rid of the class system. So that kind of system doesn't exist in most of the world today. So there really can't be, in my opinion, another Eva Perón, because I think that was really the true source of her power that made people fall in love with her. Like I said, the U.S. demonized her because of socialism. And so our nation was brought up calling her a whore and a monster. And men demonized her. I mean, since the idea of Eve taking the apple and corrupting Adam, women have gotten the short end of the stick a lot. And I feel like we tend to get blamed for our curiosity, a trait that can actually be very positive and desirable. And we're told that we're welcoming sin into the world for having it, where I think a man sometimes with the same curiosity is, you know, praised and rewarded. Revolutionaries like Che Guevara get idolized a lot of times, where Evita, the woman who gave all women the right to vote in Argentina, the woman who single-handedly more or less broke the class system, or at least started pulling it apart, gets demonized as a whore for sleeping with a powerful man when they weren't married. But, I mean, he was sleeping with her too, and they weren't married. Anyway, I severely, severely digress. I think the purpose of this podcast that I'd like to move on to now is Evita's body, which is such a funny thing to say. But, I mean, there came a point where everyone in her life knew that she was going to die. And it stopped being okay, we have to save her. And Juan Perón took aside the doctor and brought in someone else to basically preserve her body. It became an effort from, okay, we can't save her, well, let's preserve her. And there's a lot of questionable things, I think, that started happening to her before she died. She did want to be remembered for all time. So Juan Perón felt that the best way he could do that for her is to construct a monument dedicated to the working class of Argentina, where they would reveal her body to everyone on the 17th of October every year. The 17th of October is basically the Peronista holiday. It's the day to celebrate the workers. And the reason that's so important is because that was the day that Juan Perón was released from prison and basically was set to have his presidency. And a lot of people actually believe that it was Evita that led all of these efforts to get him released from prison. There's a lot of people that claim that that's not what happened, and she, in fact, actually got the crap beat out of her and went into hiding that day. So I think it's more about the legacy of supposedly her freeing Perón, him being released from prison after he was arrested when he became too powerful by the current rulers. And then that kind of just shifted, and that was when everyone knew, okay, This is going to happen. He's going to be our next president. So the 17th of October, 1945 was a very important day for all of the Peronistas. And it still is remembered as a Peronista holiday. And that was something he wanted to leave behind as a legacy to Evita. So to have this giant monument where they would reveal her body every year on that day. So that didn't happen. Before she died, they did start taking steps to preserve her body, which I'm sure didn't help with anything. And, you know, there's stories about them potentially sedating her near the end so the doctor could come in and she didn't even know to prepare her body or to start assessing it and figuring out the best course of option to keep her permanently from decaying so her body could be displayed like Lenin's. That was kind of where the inspiration had come from. There was also talk about her having a lobotomy. When they had excavated her body years later, they noticed kind of like a mark or a dent in her head that could have led people to believe that she had a lobotomy. People potentially believe he lobotomized her because she was so uncontrollable. I don't necessarily think that's true. Other people think it might have happened because she was in so much pain. They were attempting to just negate the pain near the end. Either way, that's hypothetical. It has never been proven. But Evita did die in 1952, and they quickly started preserving her body. Now, this is where things get really weird. As they were preparing the monument, there's all these stories that start to come about them doing everything they can to not just preserve her body, which they did. I mean, her body is actually still preserved and it went through all the steps. And now if you saw it, it would effectively look as it did when she passed in 1952, maybe a little bit of wear and tear there. But aside from that, there was rumors and tales where they started talking about replicating her body because it was such a political tool. So supposedly there were duplicate bodies that were put together so no one would really tell which body was hers. This is a myth, a tale. I don't know. No one's ever proven the validity of this because I don't think there's ever been any body duplications that have been revealed. But I can tell you that her body disappeared for 17 years. Shortly after she passed, Juan Perón lost his power because, I mean, I think it was pretty clear she was the driving force keeping him in the office. And his opponents then saw the perfect opportunity to kind of come and swipe the presidency out from under him. So he fled to Spain for many years and her body was left behind. The project he had to build the monument was halted. And the opposing parties took her body so that it couldn't be used as basically, so she wouldn't be a martyr. So it wouldn't be a tool used against them. And I do know what is known for certain is that her body was buried under the name Maria Maggi in Italy. So in a grave marked Maria for quite a long time. It was officially buried there and kind of put to rest. And supposedly, before that happened, it made its way all over to different officials, to different people trying to protect it, to different people trying to, you know, hurt it, to hide it. It was violated. It was supposedly cursed. There was supposedly a little girl whose father was hiding it, who thought it was a doll. I mean, there's just this wild tale in the book Santa Evita that talks about what they think they can kind of follow as the timeline of what actually happened with Evita's body as it moved around until it was put to its final resting place, quote unquote, in Italy throughout those 17 years. And specifically, it was supposedly cursed. And the people that held onto the body continually had bad things happen to them. There was a general who was shot and killed, whose wife was killed, who was murdered. There was all of these tales of terrible things that happened to the people that held onto the body until it was put in the ground in Italy. I mean, it's quite a tale. So Juan Perón was actually asked to come back to Argentina from Spain and to lead the country once again. So in 1973, he returned to Argentina to take back the presidency. And with him, he brought his third wife, Isabel Perón. I'll say I'm not a big fan of Isabel, and I don't think many people in Argentina were either, because no one was going to be Evita. And I think everybody wanted Evita, and that was not who Isabel was. And when Juan Perón came back to Argentina, there's all these stories still about them as an act of gratitude, as a way to basically make right. They actually returned Evita's body to him. And supposedly, the story goes that he put it on his dining room table, her body, and it just sat there throughout the rest of his presidency that time around. So again, you know, her body goes through this crazy story for 17 years. It's supposedly cursing everybody. It's, you know, moving from hand to hand. It gets put in an unmarked grave. There's supposedly duplicates, so no one knows which is the real, except the real one has like a chipped hand. And there's just all these stories. And then it comes back to Juan Perón, and this is actually factual that it does. And then it sits on his dining room table for the next year or two as he runs Argentina again with his second wife, Isabel, who apparently is absolutely fine with the fact that his dead second wife is on their dining room table. And there's more to this very strange and wild story where supposedly, so first of all, I should say that Isabel Perón actually became the vice president of Argentina to rule with Juan Perón. She did not have the opposition that Evita did. One, because Eva probably paved the way for women to have more power, and two, she was controllable. Unlike Evita, who was not at all controllable and would do what she wanted when she wanted, Isabel was predictable and she was controllable. So I think she was a great tool to have as a vice president. So Juan Perón became president again, and Isabel became his vice president. And there's more to this weird myth about Evita's body at this point, where people in his cabinet were just not happy about Isabel because she wasn't Evita, and no one was going to like her because she wasn't Evita. So they wanted her to be a little more unpredictable and a little more passionate and a little more Evita, basically, but not too much either, because she still needs to be controllable. So they supposedly hired this witch doctor to perform a ritual to imbue her with Evita's spirit using the body that is now on Juan Perón's dining room table. So they tried. I mean, obviously they failed. And Isabel Perón was Isabel Perón. She was who she was. She was not Evita. And on July 1st, 1974, Juan Perón died while he was in office. And that made Isabel Perón the first female president of Argentina, which is kind of just a huge smack in the face to Evita's legacy after everything that happened and why they wouldn't allow her to be the vice president. But it is what it is. And even then, the story doesn't actually stop. So it wasn't until after Juan Perón dies in 1974 that they have a joint funeral for Eva and Juan, and Eva is finally put to rest at her final resting place in 1976, and she is buried in the Cementerio de la Recoleta, so Recoleta Cemetery, which in itself is just iconically wild. Because that is It's a fancy, fancy cemetery. It's where a lot of people that had money were buried. Recoleta is a city of the dead in the truest sense, where you walk in and it is a city constructed of mausoleums. There are streets. Every single mausoleum is grander than the next because people put money into this to say, you know, this is my legacy. I'm leaving this behind. And Eva was actually buried in the Duarte family tomb there. So interestingly enough, there's a lot of Juans in Eva's life. And Juan Duarte was her father. And he was buried in the Duarte family tomb in Recoleta. And Evita got to be buried in her father's tomb. So her father's family tomb. And this is huge, by the way, because she was a bastard child. This does not happen. Again, there's a class system in Argentina at this time. This does not happen. But again, she broke the rules even after her death, well after her death, and she was buried in the Duarte family tomb, which is where she is finally at rest today. She is in a vault three stories down below the ground. And they even say that if there was a nuclear explosion in Argentina, she's so deep down in a vault underground that her body would survive. So that in itself is so interesting to me. Like, the people of Argentina, they love her so much. They don't want her legacy to die, that her body at this point, after everything it's been through, is so well protected, legitimized at death, and put into her father's family crypt in the most secretive, deepest, safest of locations, which is just wild. And her brother, Juancito, was also a Juan, who was, you know, her illegitimate brother there as well. He, you know, was he grew up with her, and they were relatively close. And so he was also buried there too. So she kind of led the way for that to happen. And it's just fascinating that it wasn't until they buried Juan Perón that they buried Evita. And of course, Juan Perón was buried elsewhere and not as safely as Eva was, because his body was actually dug up or taken out, and his hands were cut off as a political sign of aggression years later. So he was not even as securely buried as she was. And what I think is also exceptionally interesting is that if you go to visit Evita's tomb in Recoleta and you look at the plaque that's there to memorialize her, they don't list her actual date of death. They list the date she was buried. So it has her birth date, and then it has the date that she was laid to rest. So if you don't know better, it's like they've extended her life a little bit more. It's almost like they wished, they wanted to give her back the years that she had lost, which I think is very interesting. And even now, when you go there in Recoleta, it's interesting because, like I said, it's a city of the dead. There are cats everywhere. There are cats all over Recoleta. And old ladies that come in and feed the cats every day. And it's like each alleyway is monitored by one of these cats. And so you're going to go, and I was literally led to Evita's grave by a cat. It was very interesting. And there were flowers still, I mean, taking up the entire row in which her monument was, like where her family tomb was. I mean, just flowers everywhere. And she's still celebrated, and she's still memorialized, and people still come and pay their respects from all over the world. It's really wild. It's a wild tale. And then, of course, we have Isabel, who is now, if we jump back, the first female president of Argentina. And unfortunately, unlike Juan Perón, Isabel did not get away with a lot of the disappearances or things that maybe happened under her presidency. And she was actually arrested and kind of forced to flee Argentina. She is still not welcome back. And she's in her 90s, I believe. No, she's still alive in Spain. Isabel served as president following Juan Perón's death in 1974 until 2 years later, when the military took over with the coup in 76 and banished her into Spain, which is where she was from. And she was exiled to Spain in 1981 after being arrested for a few years and under house arrest. And then in 2007, an Argentine judge ordered Perón's arrest over a forced disappearance of a political activist back during her time in office. And her signature authorized the decrees. So she basically was arrested in 2007 under things that happened in the 70s under her presidency. And then the courts in Spain actually refused to send her back to Argentina. Since the death of Carlos Menem on 14th of February 2021, Isabel Perón is the oldest living former Argentine president still alive. She is 92 years old and she is still alive. Anyway, I feel like I've covered a lot of things here. I just think that is such a fascinating topic. I mean, putting aside the fact that I think Evita is so much more than people give her credit for, and the legacy she left behind is just completely unshakable. Putting all that aside, what happened to her body after she died is just so fascinating. I mean, it had an adventure for 17 years. Eva only lived to be 33 years old, and her body had a 17-year journey before it made its way back to Argentina after she passed. And I mean, there's, if you have time, either read the book Santa Evita or look up some of the legends that go behind her body, just to see all these fun tales. And people claim, oh, I housed her body. I housed her body. It was just going through this secret avenue of activists on both sides until it was, you know, put in the ground for quite some time and then dug back up and then sent back to Argentina. And then it still didn't get buried until the 70s, the late 70s. If you Google the photos, again, I can't do it. There's some very disturbing photos, because after they dug up her body, after they had found her body again, they took a bunch of pictures and they took some videos and they kind of showed its condition and what it looked like. And so there's photos out there that I just can't look at. But if you look at the photos of Juan Perón's funeral, you know, they put them together. You know, in his service, she is next to him in her glass coffin. And it's pretty wild. I mean, it's an interesting story, to say the least. And it's definitely very weird. And I'm actually going back into Argentina in November this year to work with the Magellanic Penguins. So I had to pass through Buenos Aires. So, of course, I had to set up a few days to be in Buenos Aires and Recoleta, just for old time's sake. It's somewhere that I really love. And so all of this kind of came flooding back. And I feel like now is the time to talk about Evita's body. And I hope it was interesting for you. I know last week I had said that we would talk this week about the Explorers Club Gala, but I want to bring in my friend Dakota for that, because we kind of had our first Explorers Club annual dinner together. So that's actually going to be next week now. So definitely tune in next week to hear about our Explorers Club Gala. And until then, I hope you guys stay weird.